Welcome to But Are There Dragons, a podcast where two friends pick a book at least one of them has not read and work their way through it a few chapters at a time. I'm your host, Critter.
And I'm your host, Jess.
And we're continuing this adventure with The Two Towers by J.R.R. Tolkien, with me as the resident Lord of the Rings veteran.
And me as a first-timer.
In this, our third episode of Season 3, we're going to discuss Book 3, Chapters 6 through 7. Before we dive in, Jessica, what's new with you? How are you feeling?
I'm good. Life is good. Just busy getting ready for summer and all that that entails. How about you?
Same. Still having construction going on my house a little bit. Upstairs, guest bath is becoming a laundry room also, which is going to be so convenient. That's like almost done, but nice. I've been waking up very early to let my construction people in a lot lately. So I will not be sad when I can sleep in consistently, because I am usually if I have my way, I go to bed late and I wake up late.
Yeah.
But it's fine. We're fine. Everything's fine.
Nice.
Yeah. Anyways, so let's get into this book, shall we?
Let's do it.
Okay, so Book 3, Chapter 6, The King of the Golden Hall. So especially given the chapter title, I wanted to start this episode by acknowledging the amazing life lived by Bernard Hill, who played Théoden, the King of the Golden Hall, in Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings trilogy. He passed away the same week we were reading this chapter at the age of 79. He was beloved among Tolkien fans for his incredible portrayal of King Théoden. And Billy Boyd said it perfectly. I don't think anyone spoke Tolkien's words as great as Bernard did. He would break my heart. And I just wanted to say that he will be sorely missed.
I would just say the same. I mean, I don't, I can't think of another more iconic role. The gravitas he brought to that role, it's unparalleled, and it's a loss. And just the timing was so ironic, and definitely he was on my mind as I was going through this read.
Absolutely. Yeah, so definitely was thinking of him this whole sequence during this read. Such weird timing, but may he rest in peace. So, as far as the chapter goes, the party approaches Edoras, King Théoden's court, and passes the barrows where King Théoden's sires were buried. 16 of them. Did you notice that there were 7 on one side and 9 on the other? That kind of gave me goosebumps, because he died at the age of 79. Like,
no, I didn't, but now that just made the hair on the back of my neck
stand
up. That's
I read little... Isn't that...
Yeah.
Anyways, I thought that was wild. So, 16 of them resting beneath the bright eyes in the grass, the Evermind, the Symbolmine, I'm not exactly sure how to pronounce that, flowers that bloom year-round where dead men rest. Did anything stand out to you from the party's trek to Edoras?
Just that, again, it was so, the Plains of Rohan definitely appealed to me. I think it's the horse girl stuff. yeah. And I try not, you know, I'm sure people are tired of hearing about that, but just the way that it's described, the entry, and then also keeping in mind that their encounter with Éomer made it very clear that Rohan has like a very strict borders closed policy, and they're essentially trying to make it into the king's presence undetected virtually.
Mm-hmm.
So it added a little element of suspense there, for sure.
For sure. So yeah, the party gets to the gates, and as you kind of alluded to, they're met with some real hostility. Mm-hmm. Eventually, they're let in, but they are forced to give up their weapons. Aragorn takes some real umbrage against giving up Anduril, but does it anyway. And Gandalf objects to giving up his staff and is supported by Aragorn, who helps him play the old man card, which actually works. Any thoughts from this sequence?
So first off, as they were going up, I had written down that Gandalf had a line where he said, draw no weapon, speak no haughty word, trying to tell them all, like, be cool. We're pulling a fast one here. So I thought that was pretty funny that he was trying to set them up, like, this is going to take some finagling. Don't ruin it. And then I thought that it was hilarious that was a bit from the movies, honestly. And Sir Ian McKellen did it adorably.
He did.
Just trying to look elderly and distinguished and in need of something to perch on.
The wide eyes, innocent.
Yes, super innocent. It was hilarious. And I was like, oh my God, it's a shtick from the book. Like, that's hilarious to me. And then the only other thing, slightly less fun, is that Wormtongue had given the order 2 days previous to mm-hmm. not allow anyone through the gates. And that immediately stuck out to me, just instant red flag. Like, why is Wormtongue giving orders?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Gandalf had the same reaction. Whenever he was mentioned, he got really, really mm-hmm. testy. And it definitely felt like there was a conflict brewing there. I also loved how, you know, the rule was let nobody in who can't speak our language. And Gandalf, first thing he did was speak their language back to them. And they were mm-hmm. still just like, oh, I didn't expect that.
Yeah. And even that was a little fun because I did not realize that the men of Rohan, like, I didn't realize that they spoke a different language until going through that scene. So yeah. I didn't realize there was a separate language.
Yeah, I guess I don't know this to be true, but I assume it's true. I think it's in the extended edition of The Lord of the Rings, but at the funeral of Théoden's son, Éowyn sings like a song in a different language, and I assume that that's that language, you know?
Yeah.
That's my guess.
So again, things that, like, it's been so long since I've done my last watch, and I have no idea how long it's been since I've watched the extended editions.
Wow. That's crazy. I didn't realize it had been like a really long time.
Yeah. I'm not someone that would go, you know, every year in around Christmas, I watch them. You know, I know you have rewatch parties. Yeah. Like, at set times. And I think that's fun if you have that sort of thing. And I also know people that have certain favorites that they watch every year for Thanksgiving, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I've never done that. I am, as much as I'm a mood reader, I'm a mood watcher. And so I'd be sure. Like, oh, it's been a minute. I'm due. I'm going to do a rewatch. So that mm-hmm. means I have literally no idea how long. And I think we had discussed this before. Like, I will watch either the theatrical cut or the extended edition based on whatever I can get access to digitally.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a rash of in theater screenings happening across the country. So, and I'm hoping that they will schedule some viewings in a theater near my new address very soon.
Yes. Fingers crossed. I heard, and I don't know if this is true, but I want to say they were advertising, like, the first time ever in theaters, the extended editions in the remastered versions. And I heard that that was going to be more like June-ish. So I've also got my fingers and toes crossed.
Some of our friends in Discord had dropped it. I think it's coming through AMC theaters.
Yes.
And I do believe that June was the dates. But I have to wait for them to come to my zip code.
I know. Yeah. I feel like I hear all kinds of things about, like, early releases coming to AMC or whatever. And I check my AMC right down the road from me. And it's like, it doesn't always hit there. And I just I really want the Lord of the Rings to hit there. I would travel, but I'd rather just be able to go down the street.
So if they do whichever edition, if Fellowship hits a big screen, because I've never seen it on the big screen, I will 110% be going to see it on the big screen, no matter which edition they're airing.
You must. It's a perfect movie. It's a perfect movie. I love it so much. It's just chef's kiss. But I am biased. They are my favorite movies. But I don't know if that's biased as much as just, you know, recognizing game and those movies. Yeah. They've got game.
They do. They absolutely do. It was, you know, I was much younger when those came out. Mm-hmm. We all were. And I was just like, well, poo-poo on that. And I'm not going to have anything to do with it. And I'll just wait and watch it in the comfort of my home. Looking at it now... And the way that I just went and religiously watched Dune in the movie theater, like mm-hmm. on opening weekend, because I knew that for me, I needed to experience that movie on the big screen. Mm-hmm. If I had to do it all over again, I absolutely would have gone and seen it first on the big screen.
Yeah. Well, and this is not a breaking news podcast, but we did just get news today that there are Peter Jackson affiliated Lord of the Rings movies coming down the pipeline. Mm-hmm. The first one that I want to say I saw an article that said there were two coming, but the first one is like The Hunt for Gollum.
And I saw that too. I didn't click on it because I'm scared to click on things. Yeah. But as soon as I saw the title, The Hunt for Gollum, I was
I
get that reference.
I know about that. I thought the same thing. I was like, oh my gosh, like that's something that we read about. Like that's something that Gandalf described to us. And like Aragorn also kind of told us about, I think. And I guess like directed by Andy Serkis, which is funny because this week for my movie club, I just watched Rise of the Planet of the Apes, which, you know, Andy Serkis, once again, absolutely slaying with all of the motion capture and whatever, playing Caesar the Ape, I believe, is what he did in that movie. But anyway, so like having him involved, having Peter Jackson involved, having it be a story that actually exists in the books, all of these things have me just a little excited.
Yeah, I mean, who knows how long it'll take to come to fruition, but it is, you know, it kind of revives in me a little bit of that excitement, only this time I feel like I'm in on the joke a little bit more.
Because you know.
Because now I know.
What, The Hunt for Smeagol? We know what that, we know what that is.
I know what that is.
Yeah, I mean, so far they're saying it's projecting or whatever for 2026, which to me it feels like, you know, I'm in the time of James Cameron, where 10 years go by and you don't get a new Avatar movie. Mm-hmm. You know, if they really do it that quickly, then awesome, that's great. But I guess Peter Jackson is the guy who shot 3 Lord of the Rings movies in 3 years,
right?
So
I guess they must have a script then. So like I said, I didn't click on it because again, I do. You know, I'm pretty deep in this right now.
I don't want to ruin anything.
And I also know that I have friends on the side who will give me the deets without any spoilers. So, so I'm definitely interested if they're planning on having it done in 2 years. It kind of makes me wonder, is there already a script in there?
I would think.
Because that's 2 years is a very ambitious timeline if
they don't
have anything in writing yet.
I would think, yeah, I need to actually like sit down and read the full article, because of course I've been reading like snippets from it, I've been reading headlines, and it just came out today, so I need to do a deep dive on the news just to see. And it'll a lot of times exciting. Whenever they release stuff like this, they don't even tell you
the whole story
other than like release date 2026. I heard some, I need to look at the article, because some people are like, all the people involved are going to be like way older. That'll be weird. So I'm like, are they literally using Ian McClellan as Gandalf and Viggo Mortensen as Aragorn? And like, is Orlando Bloom as Legolas going to be in this? Because yeah, that would be
weird.
It would be different. They, you know, but anyways, if you know,
we'll see.
Let us know in the comments. Otherwise I'll sure. obviously be reading the article.
Yeah.
And many articles come, I assume. Okay, so that was a huge tangent, but exciting, because we love Peter Jackson, basically. So they get let in, right?
Yes.
They basically exchange insults with Theoden and Wormtongue for a while, and I wrote down some of my favorites, some of the notable ones. If you would care to rate them by burn level, so let's establish what the scale is. Do you want to go like 1 to 5 flame emojis, or what are we talking about here?
1 to 5 flame emoji sounds manageable. Are we saying 1 flame emoji is, you know, least, low grade sizzle?
Yeah.
And 5 flames is somebody call the fire up department?
Exactly. Yep.
Okay.
Bring it on. First one, Theoden to Gandalf. When Éomer brought the tidings that you had gone at last to your long home, I did not mourn.
I'm going to go 2.
Okay.
2 flames, you know, pretty salty, but, you know.
More mean than like a zinger, you know, just like, ugh.
Definitely mean. Gave me cranky old man vibes.
Yeah. Okay. And I'm going to do my best with these impressions. And by best, I mean, it's going to be mediocre. So Wormtongue to Gandalf. Lath spell I name you. Ill news. And ill news is an ill guest.
I had highlighted this one too. I do think that this is a little bit more mean-spirited, so I'll up it to 3.
Uh-huh,
3 fire emojis.
And the wording. It's
yes.
It's, It has a little something. Okay, so Wormtongue again, and I'm not. This is an exact quote, but he called the troop three ragged wanderers in gray, and called Gandalf the most beggar-like of the four.
Two. Okay. You got nothing better to say than to diss their clothes.
Yeah, we've been traveling, and also their clothes are from Lothlorien.
Yeah.
Get with the program. Galadriel helped weave these. Okay, so Gandalf to Theoden. The courtesy of your hall is somewhat lessened of late.
This is one of my top three from this section.
Okay.
And I actually would give this three fire emojis because I feel like it is so subtle and yet very much a dig.
Yeah, you're supposed to be this noble king. We are all... worthy guests, and we're not getting anything good.
Yeah.
Okay, this is the last one I have written down, so if you have other ones, let me know. But this one is Gandalf to Wormtongue. A witless worm you have become. Therefore, be silent, and keep your forked tongue behind your teeth.
So that's my number five. That was my highlighted, I loved this, and also... personal note to follow up. I think some version of this made it into the movie.
It did.
But it was my favorite. So the third that I have is an honorable mention. I will call it by my, why don't you judge it 1 through 5?
Okay. Okay.
Master Gandalf, you have ever been a herald of woe.
Okay. Yeah. I'm going to give it a 2 because nobody mm-hmm. likes to hear that they're a Debbie Downer, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm going to give it a 2.
It was definitely my honorable mention, but mm-hmm. It was kind of at the top. It was kind of at the beginning of exchanges. And I was like, oh, we're starting out a little spicy. But
this is tense.
Keep your forked tongue behind your teeth. And I was like, snap, that is good.
Oh, yeah, I got to use that one. Hopefully never. That would be kind of rude to tell somebody that. But if I need to, I've got it ready in the mm-hmm. chamber.
It's on tap.
Yeah. Okay, so Gandalf, dramatically as always, frees Theoden from the darkness that was holding him in his clutches. In the midst of the exchange, Aragorn and Eowyn, Theoden's niece, lock eyes. First things first, do you ship?
No. I wasn't sure. Sure. So, and there's another scene later on where I actually highlighted it. And I was like, is this romance?
Maybe a one-sided romance.
You know, I was like, this is not, and I don't read Tolkien for romance, right? That's not, I don't need it to be. Mm-hmm. But I was like, is that what was supposed to be? Because I don't know if it really...
Yeah.
Signaled that to me. So I did think that it was interesting to have Eowyn be taken with Aragorn, if nothing else, as a representative of the rest of humanity that is taken with Aragorn, male, female, and be whoever you may be. I think there's tons of us who are in love with Aragorn to one extent or another.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. No matter how you identify, it's a relatable condition, is all
it
I'm
sure
saying.
Is. It sure is.
So I get it from that perspective. And to create maybe a little bit of movie magic tension, the distance between Aragorn and Arwen and, mm-hmm. to kind of manifest a bit of a triangle. But no, what I realized reading this chapter is I don't ship.
Yeah.
No shade to anybody who does. I was just like, oh, I learned something about myself today.
I do feel like Tolkien took the time to be like, okay, so this is how Aragorn's effect on women. You know, have you seen the Office episode where Idris Elba is a guest and he's like, I'm aware of my effect on women.
Yes.
So in that way, it was like, okay, Tolkien and for the third woman that we've met in this entire series, mm-hmm. After Galadriel and Arwen, who didn't even speak, mm-hmm. We've got Eowyn, and she is the first human woman that we've met, and she is immediately going to fall in love with Aragorn. At least that's mm-hmm. the vibe he wanted to make sure that we got. Whereas Aragorn, in his mind, is like, oh, she's beautiful, but cold. Mm-hmm. And then later, he's like, oh, this is a nice exchange between us, but I'm not going to smile. You know, it's just like he's very much, there's like a big wall there, which makes sense, assuming he's with Arwen, which he is. Like, we've established that, right? Because he, because she left him that present with Galadriel. And...
Yes, but even that was very backhanded and left me going, is this romance?
Yeah, are they together? It's true. Yeah, it's been very, we're not sure.
And that's fine, right? Like, if it's an epic adventure story, you know, the a romance slant is not required by any means. No. Just am like, are you actually trying to do that? I'm not 100% sure if that's what you're trying to do.
Is this love?
Is this love? Because I was like, the one contact between Aragorn and Arwen is their hands accidentally touch on a cup. And she fills with hope and he fills with dread is how it reads. And he's, I'm like, oh, no. So in my head, my super sarcastic head, I was like the Lady and the Tramp scene where, is this love? Na, 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 na.
And Aragorn's like, no.
No.
Yep, pretty much. That's what it feels like for now. So the second question I had about this dramatic exchange is, how'd you like Theoden's release?
I liked Theoden's release. I do think it was more subtle and felt like it had a couple of stages to it in reading it. I do think that having seen the way Peter Jackson did it on screen helped me, because I don't think I would have gotten that at the end this was in fact a transformation without having that mental imagery to pull on, because again, I'm not very good at coming up with visuals on my own. So I did think that it was more subtle, and in that way also kind of like a little bit more insidious, like how long it had taken for him to get this far, for Wormtongue to have had this kind of effect on him, and how gradual it must have been. And to see, you know, that kind of just alleviated in several very specific steps by Gandalf and the interactions that they had.
Yeah, I thought it was really good. And I don't know, I would call this literary umami, but Theoden, after he kind of comes out of it, he says, dark have been my dreams of late, but I feel as one new awakened. It's, that's also, I believe, pulled line for line into the movies. And it just like, it just... he kind of gives you the idea. He's just been under this cloud, under the shroud, like he hasn't been himself. And I agree that his physical transformation, it was written into the book, but like, there's nothing quite like showing, you know, something like that happening on the screen. It was definitely, I think we got more crusty on the screen than I would have pictured just reading it. And like, and yeah, it just like the degree of change, I think, was more severe than I would have pictured it in the movie. Yeah, in the book than I would have pictured. No, it was more severe in the movie than I would have pictured it just from the book.
Just based on the book description. But I think the accentuation by Peter Jackson and his team was well served.
I agree. I agree. There was some of it, though. Like, I will say, you know, like him standing up straight once he got the sword.
I was just
going to
say, yeah, so like, I was like, I didn't realize we were in it until there was another interaction and he stood up straighter. And I was like, oh, this is happening. And it's kind of happening gradually via conversation as he's kind of being verbally shaken from the haze that he is in.
Yeah. Yeah. So it totally... there's some theatrics, but we love Gandalf for the theatrics. And then boom. Yeah, he takes him outside. So then Theoden decides to free Éomer, who I hadn't mentioned, but Éomer was in prison, I guess, for basically going against something Wormtongue wanted. Theoden calls the Riders of Rohan to arms, and he banishes Wormtongue rather than imprisoning him. Would you have done the same?
No, but I am not a gracious leader.
I wouldn't say that.
I would. I'm not all that good natured. I think that somebody who can exert that kind of influence shouldn't be left roaming around, especially in such dark times. But I think that I can get behind why he did it.
Yeah.
I'm not always on the side of merciful, because I'm always concerned that merciful is going to bite you in the butt.
Yeah. People keep showing mercy in these books, right? We had Bilbo with Gollum, you know, and now Théoden with Wormtongue, who had been fully corrupting the whole thing for a while. And we'll actually see, well, I don't know if it's in this recording, but we'll see more of it soon, actually. So yeah, we've got Théoden bestowing upon Gandalf Shadowfax, officially handing over the title. So thank God for that. And upon Legolas and Gimli, ornate armaments. The riders prepare for war, and Théoden, after seemingly forgetting that Éowyn existed, appointed her the steward of the hall, since there were literally no male options. Did this make you feel any type of way?
I don't ever like the woman being a last ditch effort, you know, like being the last option.
Yeah.
But it is not an unheard of convention, especially at the time of writing. It does not justify it. It's just the way a lot of things were handled back then.
I think the way it was worded was the worst thing for me, because it was Théoden's over here just like, there are no other people in this line. And his guard had to be like, yeah, there are. What about her? She's literally,
she's standing right there. She's
standing. What do you like? Yeah, it was, it was disappointing. But ultimately, I was happy that she did get appointed. It wasn't like she can't do it. She's a woman. So at least there was that. Like, that was an exciting little turn of events.
Yeah, that's the silver lining. There was no, well, this job can't be done by a woman. At least there was none of that.
Right, right. A woman beloved by all. Mm-hmm. Like, perfect. Great. We love her.
We love to see it.
Okay, so the chapter ends with Éowyn watching the glitter of the departing rider's spears, standing still alone before the doors of the silent house. Any final thoughts?
I had another quote.
Yeah.
That Théoden said about Amir when he was releasing him from custody. Faithful heart may have a froward tongue, which just means contrary. And I loved that. It's just a silly thing, but the wording was interesting. And then the only other note that I had was just that I thought that Wormtongue was just as greasy and distasteful in the book. And he was so wonderfully portrayed by the actor in the movie. Don't get me wrong, but he had really good source material because it was almost like it was very two-faced politician, as well as just I can just tell by listening to you talk that you are a no good dirty rat.
By the way you talk, by the things you do, just all of it. You're just a piece of garbage.
So I thought that was interesting. I was like, you know, it's the, and again, just put me in mind of that performance. I was like, he really nailed it. He really crushed that performance.
He really did. And the one thing that I was just like thinking in my head when I saw it in theaters, well, and I watch it ever since, is like, how do you look at that? The way he played, the cringing, the like sneering, the snarling, the greasy hair, all of that, the way he played, I'm just like, how do you look at that person? And you're like, that's a worthy advisor to a king, you know, like, just slimy.
Bad.
So he was perfect. He played it perfect. Okay. Book 3, chapter 7.
Yes.
Helm's Deep. So, fun fact. The Battle of Helm's Deep is one of the longest, if not the longest, battle scene ever committed to film.
Okay.
Yes. And in the Two Towers book, it is one chapter. And when I saw that, it literally blew my mind, and I changed our planned chapters for this read. So I was like, we're going to read more than this? Like, I think we're going to stop here. Did this surprise you that it was just one chapter after having seen the movies?
It did. It did surprise me, but also a lot happened. So I'm not unaccustomed to beefy chapters where they where he managed to fit a lot into a chapter. But yeah. At first, yes, I was like, oh, and we're moving on. Got it.
Yeah, just straight. We visited Theoden and now immediately it's time for Helm's Deep.
Here we go.
I guess you and I are kind of the wrong people to be surprised by a gigantic battle taking up one chapter, because in the Wheel of Time books, such a thing does happen. I believe in the final book, no spoilers, obviously, a single chapter called The Last Battle covers more than 600 pages in a standard paperback. Our hardcover, I don't know, it's a long chapter. It's a really long chapter.
It's enough to count as a novella all on its own.
Like a novel. Yeah. It's like 600 pages of a paperback. That's a novel.
I don't think it's 600, honestly. I think it's closer to 250. But
what?
It's still that's a book to plenty of people.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I must be wrong then. The Last Battle, I have to look it up.
Okay.
Sorry.
And I could be wrong. God knows, it happens.
Pages. Okay, 214 pages in my copy. Maybe I'm. Doesn't matter. It's very long.
It is very long. And if you're reading it in the regular, like, little paperback, that's going to be a different page count than in the big paper, the big hardcovers that I was using.
Yeah. So, however long it is, it's wild long. And Helm's Deep, similarly. Well, not similarly. Nowhere near as long, but it's funny that it's like one of the longest battles ever committed to film, and it's a single chapter. So, all that being said, as the company rides, they run into a messenger bearing ill tidings. Gandalf immediately and mysteriously decides to leave, bidding them to head to Helm's Deep without delay, and to look for him there after an urgent errand. Thoughts on Gandalf's mysterious exit, like, why did it happen? And could he not have explained it?
But would he? Could he? Yes. But would he? I just wrote Gandalf's leaving again with my dot, dot, dot. Because I'm very Gen X, so I love my ellipses. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't surprised, not to get any context. Even since his return, he seems to still have some really inherent Gandalf ways.
Yeah. Gandalf the White is still Gandalf, turns out.
Mm-hmm.
Him just deciding to leave. And then, so there were two writers there that we got like a little aside conversation from, like a really sketchy convo about Gandalf's departure. One of them felt a bit like a Wormtongue sympathizer, right? Because he's like, oh, you know, like, the one was like, oh, we'll see when he gets back. And the guy's like, might be a while. Just like, dude. What a loser.
Well, and then his friend is like, well, I bet Wormtongue would have something to say about that.
Right. He cites Wormtongue. So it's like, are you team Wormtongue?
So I thought it wasn't funny. So I think of like Shakespeare, and Shakespeare loved to use bystanders to interject humor. And so I thought of that and I kept waiting for the funny.
And it wasn't.
I'm like, oh, so this isn't Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. Oh, okay. Bye, guys.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's angry people. It's interesting because, like, this is another apologies for the Wheel of Time references, but this is something that happens in the first book and it happens in the show, so everyone would know what it's about. But in the Wheel of Time, there's this city that was corrupted by, like, these really hateful, like, basically the hatred and greed of man generally, right? And so it, like, that just infects the entire city, and they wall themselves off, and they just don't trust anyone, and they're greedy, and it just feels like, it feels like Wormtongue, I guess, as influenced by Saruman, possibly as influenced by Sauron, has seeped into some of the men of Rohan, so they're starting to distrust, they're starting to be dissatisfied with outside influence. And that was the first thing that I thought of, was just like, they're so suspicious. Like, do one of them have a corrupted dagger from Shatter Logoth that I'm missing?
I mean, if nothing else, look at how drastic an effect he was able to have on Theoden, right? So who's to say he couldn't do that to anybody who spent prolonged amounts of time with him?
Yeah. So Wormtongue sympathizer, not a funny aside, but like an interesting aside in that way. Yeah.
And I don't feel like we see a lot of bystander input
No.
From Tolkien as a writer. So it was a bit of a standout moment. Like, oh, that's it? Just four lines? Okay.
Yeah. Just like I didn't place it as such, but you're so right that it feels very Shakespearean. Just like pulls aside, like, yeah, hey, buddy, you know, what do you think about this situation? Right? Like, it's perfect. I bet that's what inspired it, honestly.
I did have a note leading up to this part.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like I knew that there were men in Saruman's army. So throughout this section, we hear talk of other bands of men that have been recruited into Saruman's army, you know, no real context added at that point. Mm-hmm. And I was just sitting there going, yet again, did I watch this movie? Because I'm like, do I remember there being anything other than orcs? And I don't know that I do. I'm not saying there weren't. I'm just saying if there were, I certainly didn't notice, or they just kind of blended into the background. And I was just like, it's an orc army. Turns out, no, there are men in Saruman's army. And now I know.
And there were several things that would have been different about the Helm's Deep in the movie and the Helm's Deep in the book that we will talk about here.
Yeah.
Speaking of Helm's Deep, we've established in episodes past that neither of us are battle girlies.
No, it's so hard.
So I'm not going to break it down with this outline. I'm not going to go like beat by beat in the battle. I'll just ask, I have some points lined up that I thought were good, but do you have any high points from the battle?
From the battle, I had a couple of... first off, leading up into it, Gimli has a dwarf crush on the region, and he's talking about there's good rocks here, and I just was like, you are so precious. I adore you.
I know.
But anyways, I'm going to put on my battle girly hat now. So,
no, I'm glad you mentioned that. I should have mentioned that, because it was like, cute.
That is the most adorable thing.
Yeah.
And in the same breath, not in the same breath, but pretty close after it, Gimli saying, give me a row of orc necks and room to swing and all the weariness will fall from me. Mm-hmm. And I could absolutely hear John Rhys-Davies saying that. Loved it. But I did try real hard to take some battle related notes. So okay. I liked the fact that they described the attackers being described as a dark tide flowing up the walls.
Mm-hmm.
Very creepy. Possum orcs. So there was a band of orcs that pretended to be dead and stayed with the fallen orcs and then came back from life and attacked them. I was like, that's some shiesty stuff right there.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then that the orcs snuck in through the culvert so that they were attacking from inside and from without.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing that I took note of, especially in this chapter, is sometimes the metaphors don't land. You know, a lot of times, okay. I've already explained that the way Tolkien writes is very beautiful to me, and I can see how it might be difficult for some, but generally, I don't feel like I struggle with it too much. But I was like, I'm sorry, sir, what?
Oh my God, give me an example. I must hear what we're talking about here.
He's got in there, upon a great field of dark corn, describing, I'm assuming, a field, a dark nighttime field full of orcs.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like,
corn?
So, and I completely am fine with the shortcomings on my part. I don't understand how you get from orcs to corn. It's fine. Most of the metaphors, simile, flowery language he uses, I really love, and I find that it enhances the imagery. This one, I was just like, the what?
Excuse me?
So that
I remember that. Like, I remember pausing on it like, corn?
Mm-hmm.
So they're just standing there swaying. That's like, okay, I guess that makes sense.
Sure.
That's so funny.
And then I had just two more things. Sorry.
Yeah.
The fact that the counting thing is real in the books.
I had that too. I love their little competition. So cute.
I love a good bromance.
Yes.
And Gimli and Legolas deliver on that in spades for me. So the fact that they started actually doing the counting, I got really excited. I like fist bumped. to myself because I read by myself. But I was very excited. And then the last one was a quote from Aragorn saying, yet dawn is ever the hope of men.
I literally have that as one of mine. I agree. Excellent quote. But anyways, yeah. Don't keep going. I just wanted to be like,
those are my highlights.
Yeah.
From dawn, battle. Dawn is, that was me being a battle girl.
We tried our best. Yeah. So I also have dawn is ever the hope of men. Aragorn was such a leader during this. Like he was like saving people were saving him. He was saving people. He was like talking to Theoden. I don't know. It was just like, I think he looks at Aemir at one point and is like, now we'll fight together or something. It was just very much like, okay, Aragorn, like get it, man. Yeah. Yes. You are a dreamboat, first of all. But like, secondly, yeah, I could see the leadership thing. Mm-hmm. And then Theoden deciding to do his final charge was like, obviously, I think I read like a synopsis or something and they were like, not a practical move, but, you know, like for a normal battle, but good for him. And then only to find that the terrain had completely changed into a forest. Gandalf had showed up with reinforcements and that was basically the end. The charge was meaningless except for like it's very symbolic and nice to see. So this is one difference other than the fact that there were evil men there. The trees.
Huge.
Did this surprise you?
It surprised me like crazy. And I had there was also a little bit of additional context about Saruman in here too that talks about there's a quote, there's an old hatred that Saruman had inflamed. So it talks about how the men, the bands of men were recruited by Saruman. So apparently these men are, you know, had very, very old bad blood and Saruman played on that. And so that and a couple of other things. And I was like, he does a lot of manipulation, misinformation, misdirection. He's got a lot of machinations going in the background. And that kind of stood out to me that I don't feel, again, context I don't think I ever got from the movie if it was there and I just didn't see it. But
no, he felt very isolated.
Yeah. So, sure. So that was kind of crazy. Also, another point for Aragorn, you were talking about what a great job he did with leadership in this chapter. And I agree to the point where he kind of gave an attaboy to Gimli and how he was fighting. He says about Gimli, never did I see an axe so wielded, talking up what a great fighter Gimli was. And from where we started, where dwarves are, you know, where Gimli's being kind of dismissed and disregarded as a subpar species in some circles, to hearing Aragorn speak highly of his fighting skills, not just speaking lovingly or fondly of him as a travel mate, but actually complimenting his battle skills. I love to see it.
Yeah. I love that too. Gimli has been such a, I don't want to say a punchline, but kind of, right? He's always like, I don't want to ride this horse. I would be so much better on the ground, you know, and I don't want to run this distance.
As my little legs can carry me.
Exactly. He's been, I don't want to say a hindrance, but like he's been keeping up with them, but like he's been the slower person in the party. He's been the person who has to find somebody else to ride on the back of their horse, whatever. Like, and now he's just dominating, right? He's slaying, he's killing the game. We love to see it. Finally he has the orc necks that he's been asking for this whole time, and it was really satisfying to read,
and that Aragorn saw it and acknowledged it,
and that it's not just him, it's not just us seeing it, it was
acknowledged in the story. And for whatever reason I got really fixated on it and I really loved it in the moment. And I had also taken note of Theoden's last stand, his Butch Cassidy moment. I will not end here, taken like an old badger in a trap. I would make such an end as will be worth a song. And, you know, I can relate to that probably a little bit more than I should. And then my final note is that, and then Gandalf shows up with reinforcements like a boss. And again, more bands of men that I had never heard of before.
Well, in the movie, like Éomer had been banished, right? So Gandalf shows up with Éomer. But so I guess that's kind of like it's a different way to do it because Éomer was with Aragorn and Théoden, but like it's similar.
And these specific, you know, clans of men aren't necessarily pertinent to the story, but, you know, just broadens the world that much more.
Yeah.
So.
And also, I guess another difference between the movie was Gandalf told them when he was coming back. He's like, yes. look for me at dawn on the third day or whatever in the movie. Mm-hmm. And this time he's like, I'll be back. Just, mm-hmm. I'll be back. Just, mm-hmm. you'll be fine.
And Theoden calls him on it too, which I love.
Yeah. Okay, so the chapter ends with the orcs. Wailing, they passed under the waiting shadow of the trees. And from that shadow, none ever came again.
Yes.
Quite the ending.
Mm-hmm.
Final thoughts on the chapter before we do MVP?
I really liked it. And I can understand why some folks would have wanted to see the battle in the movie maybe represent this a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Because, like, the elves also showed up to Helm's Deep. Mm-hmm. That didn't happen in the books. It was mm-hmm. the men. The men did mm-hmm. it for themselves. Obviously, and Gimli and Legolas, but...
Yeah.
And the trees, obviously. So I guess, like, yeah, that which was so huge and different.
Yeah.
But... Yeah, it was different. Both good, both excellent.
Yes,
It was fun though because I had kind of forgotten about the trees. Not gonna lie, I've seen the movie so many times that it was like when the tree showed up, I was like, "Oh yeah, duh, that happened."
Yeah.
Okay, so we've got a tradition where we pick an MVP from the chapters we've read for each episode. Cue the music. Jessica, who would you name as your MVP this episode?
I am going to go with Gandalf again. He broke the haze surrounding Theoden, whatever it was, and showed up with reinforcements that really turned the tide at Helm's Deep. I feel like for these two chapters, that's huge. You can't ignore it.
Man, we're not having any controversial.
Three in a row.
We're not having any controversial, MVPs this time around. Because I agree, I think Gandalf took it. I think Gimli did amazing in battle. Legolas did amazing in battle. Aragorn had that leadership thing going for him. But man, Gandalf did the thing. He freed mm-hmm. Theoden. He got him. He did it all. He saved them at Helm's Deep, even though he was a little sneaky about it. That's just Gandalf for you, right? So,
and if Gandalf hadn't done what he had done in Chapter 6, Chapter 7 wouldn't have gone as well as it did, even, you know, because he needed to break Theoden free in order for Chapter 7 to happen. So, yeah.
Yeah, Gandalf wins. If you disagree, let us know who your MVP is, either on my Discord where we talk about the podcast or in the comments on YouTube. I'm curious to see if anybody has any different results. Of course, whatever you decide is totally acceptable. I disagree with you, but it's acceptable. So I'm curious to see if anybody picks anyone other than Gandalf, because he really slayed these chapters, in my opinion. Yeah.
But we want to hear it, so feel free to tell us on Discord or via socials. So that's it for tonight. We would ask that folks read chapters 8 through 10 for next week. Both Critter and I want to say thank you so much for tuning into episode 3 of season 3 of But Are There Dragons, brought to you by your hosts Jessica Sadai and Critter XD. Don't forget to follow us at But Are There Dragons on YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok, and But Dragons Pod just one T on X. You can also find us on social media as Critter XD and Shelf Indulgence. That's it for today. We're going to continue to workshop new catchphrases, so let us know on socials how you feel about this one. Farewell, my hobbits. May we meet again next week. Bye.